Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower. We also use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today on the program, we begin with Ask a Teacher. Dr. Jill Robbins will answer a language question from one of our listeners. This week, she will teach us the language of social distancing. Jonathan Evans talks about the return of Victory Gardens in the United States. Brian Lynn reports on a high school student who worked with NASA on a very cool task. We end our broadcast with American Stories. Today, we will hear the end of Edgar Rice Burroughs' story, A Princess of Mars. Now, here is Dr. Jill with Ask a Teacher.
This week, we answer a question from Terrence in Vietnam. He writes, which of the following forms is more correct in English usage? Yes, we can go out, but we need to be social distant from one another. Or, yes, we can go out, but we need to be social distanced from one another. Terrence, Vietnam. Dear Terrence, thank you for this timely question. The expression social distancing is new to everyday English. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, uses it to describe the practice of avoiding gatherings and keeping about 2 meters distant from other people. One sign of this social distancing is the markings on floors of some shops. They show where we should stand in relation to others. The World Health Organization, or WHO, is using a new term, however. We're changing to say physical distance, and that's on purpose, because we want people to still remain connected, said Maria van Kerkhoff, an infectious diseases expert at the WHO. Technology right now has advanced so greatly that we can keep connected in many ways, without being in the same room, she noted. Terrence, in your sentences, you use social distance, but the term under discussion employs a different noun, distancing, to talk about the method of avoiding disease. I would change your first sentence this way. Yes, we can go out, but we need to practice social distancing. That is using the expression as a noun. The verb is practice. In March, the Merriam-Webster Dictionary expanded its definitions for many of the words we use to talk about the spread of COVID-19. The dictionary now includes a medical definition for the verb socially distance. To distance physically from other people or avoid any unnecessary contact with others during the outbreak of a contagious disease. For your second sentence, you can use this verb form. Yes, we can go out, but we need to socially distance ourselves from each other. You could also say, we need to physically distance ourselves from one another, but I would love to meet you in a video call tonight. Another new expression we have is flatten the curve. That basically means to slow the spread so that medical systems do not get overwhelmed. And you may have heard the term frontline workers. Those are the people employed in healthcare, delivery services, emergency services, food production, and food stores. They are the people who cannot work from the safety of their homes. And we are very thankful for them. So, if your friend asks you, why are we social distancing? You can answer, to flatten the curve and protect frontline workers. And now, I will ask you to do something. Please send your questions about English to us by email, learningenglish@voanews.com. I'm Jill Robbins.
Victory gardens were very popular in the United States during World War I. But now, victory gardens have made a comeback in the United States. Find out more from Jonathan Evans.
During World War I, posters saying "Food will win the war" urged Americans to grow their own food in what became known as victory gardens. More than 100 years later, home gardeners are returning to that idea in the fight against a pandemic. The spread of the new coronavirus raises fears about problems with food supplies and the cost of food in a weak economy. So, many gardeners are coming together to learn and share stories on how to grow vegetables, fruits, and flowers. Creating a victory garden now can be a shared experience during hardship and uncertainty. Rose Hayden Smith is a historian and author of the book Sowing the Seeds of Victory: American Gardening Programs of World War I. She told the Associated Press that the current time is a lot like it was during World War I. Not only was there a war, but there was an influenza pandemic, she said. Now, gardeners, new and old, are getting online and on social media to post pictures of their backyards, gardens, or seeds growing under electric lights. Facebook groups like Victory Garden 2020 or Victory Garden Over COVID-19 are filling up. Some of these gardeners are newly unemployed. Others are working parents at home with their children. Some are gardening fans who never had the time to explore their interest. Urban community gardeners are increasing production to feed families who have lost income or children who no longer get meals at school. In New York City, Jennifer McShane had to close her drinking establishment because of the COVID-19 spread there. She has been eating mostly frozen vegetables. She is concerned about buying fresh produce from a grocery store. But she knew how to plant herbs in containers in her home. So she bought some tomato seeds, planted them, and called them seeds of hope. "I can't wait for the plants to come in, because I am desperate. The things I am missing are the fresh things," she said. A common reason to grow vegetables during World War I was a limited food supply. Hayden Smith explained that America was sending food to European allies and American troops. Victory gardens also were a way to assimilate America's many new immigrants through a patriotic and community-building effort. Hayden Smith considers social media posts about gardening during the pandemic as modern versions of the Victory Garden poster. "We don't have poster art, but we have Instagram," she said. In Chicago, a nonprofit group called Urban Growers Collective teaches children and others to grow vegetables at 8 urban farms around the city. Their spring educational programs are on hold because of rules about social distancing. But Laurel Sims, who helped start the group, said they are still putting effort into food production and getting produce to families who need it. The group is selling bags of homegrown vegetables like kale, spinach, and scallions. Sims said prices for some kinds of produce are beginning to increase in Chicago. She said most community gardens right now are closed, but her group is hoping to get them reopened with limits on the number of people permitted to work in them at one time. Sims added, "The whole heart of a community garden is a community. When we know that our neighbors are sick, when we know our neighbors are compromised, we're able to help them out." I'm Jonathan Evans.
From gardens on the earth to news from outer space, here is Brian Lynn.
An American high school student has named the first helicopter to be sent to Mars. Ingenuity was the name chosen by the U.S. space agency NASA in a competition involving thousands of students across America. The name was suggested by Vanessa Rupani, a junior at Tuscaloosa County High School in Northport, Alabama. The Merriam-Webster Learner's Dictionary defines ingenuity as skills that permit someone to solve problems, invent things. Rupani's entry was one of 28,000 from students of all ages from all 50 states, NASA said in a statement. The names had already been sent in as part of a naming competition that ended in March for NASA's new Mars Explorer. Perseverance was the winning name chosen by a Virginia student for the new six-wheeled robotic explorer. NASA said that with so many good suggestions for the explorer, it decided to also choose a name from the same entries for the helicopter, which will travel to Mars attached to Perseverance. In her entry, Rupani explained her name choice. She wrote that ingenuity is what permits us to accomplish amazing things and expand our horizons to the edges of the universe. NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine said ingenuity represents the values that our helicopter tech demo will showcase. Rupani told the Associated Press, "It was really cool. I got to be a part of something like this." NASA says the Explorer, which weighs about 1,043 kilograms, will collect samples from Mars for eventual return to Earth. It will also look for signs of past life and gather climate and geology data. The Explorer and helicopter are currently going through final building steps and inspection at NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida. The two are targeted to launch in July or August. After a long trip, Perseverance is expected to land at Jezero Crater on Mars on February 18, 2021. After arriving on the Red Planet, the helicopter will remain under a covering to protect it until the timing is right for the aircraft to be deployed. Ingenuity will then have a 31-day flight window to prove that powered flights can be successful on Mars, NASA said. The planned launch of Perseverance is part of a program that also includes missions to the Moon to prepare for possible human exploration of Mars. NASA plans to land the first woman and the next man on the Moon by 2024. After that, it will seek to establish what it calls a lunar gateway, a small spaceship that would remain in orbit around the Moon. It would be designed as a base from which astronauts could make trips to the Moon and possibly Mars. I'm Brian Lynn.
Tars Tarkas came slowly toward me with his thin sword. I backed away. I did not want to fight him. I did not wish his death. He had been as kind to me as a green Martian can be. As I stood watching him, a rifle fired in the distance. Then another, and another. Tars Tarkas and his warriors were under attack from another tribe of green warriors. Within seconds, a terrible battle raged. As I watched, three of the attackers fell on Tars Tarkas. He killed one and was fighting with the other two when he slipped and fell. I ran to his aid, swinging my sword. He was on his feet. Shoulder to shoulder, we fought against the attackers. They finally withdrew after an hour of fierce fighting.
John Carter, I think I understand the meaning of the word friend. You saved my life when I was about to take yours. From this day, you are no longer a captive among our people, but a leader and great warrior among us.
There was a smile on his face. Once again, he took off a metal band from his arm and gave it to me.
I have a question for you, John Carter. I understand why you took the Red Woman with you, but why did Sola leave her people and go with you?
She did not want to see me or the princess harmed. She does not like the great games held by your people where captives are led to die. She knows if she is caught, she too will die in the games. She told me she hates the games because her mother died there.
What? How could she know her mother?
She told me her mother was killed in the games because she had hidden the egg that produced her. Her mother hid Sola among other children before she was captured. Sola said she was a kind woman, not like others of your tribe. Tars Tarkas grew angry as I was speaking, but I could see past his anger. I could see pain in his eyes. I immediately knew Sola's great secret. I have a question for you, Tars Tarkas. Did you know Sola's mother?
Yes, and if I could have, I would have prevented her death. I know this story to be true. I have always known the woman who died in those games had a child. I never knew the child. I do now. Sola is also my child.
For 3 days, we followed the trail left by the Princess Deja Torres, Sola, and poor, ugly Wula. At last, we could see them in the distance. Their animal could no longer be ridden. They were talking. When we came near, Wula turned to fight us. I slowly walked to him with my hand out. Sola was standing nearby. She was armed and prepared to fight. The princess was lying next to her feet. Sola, what is wrong with the princess?
She has been crying much these past few days, John Carter. We believed you died so we could escape. The thought of your death was very heavy on this woman, my friend Deja Thoris. Come and tell her you are among the living. Perhaps that will stop her crying.
I walked to where the Princess Deja Thoris was lying on the ground. She looked at me with eyes that were red from crying. Princess, you are no longer in danger. Tars Tarkas has come with me as a friend. He and his warriors will help to see you safely home. And Sola, I would have you greet your father, Tars Tarkas, a great leader among your people. Your secret no longer means death to anyone. He already knows you are his daughter. The two of you have nothing to fear. Sola turned and looked at Tars Tarkas. She held out her hand. He took it. It was a new beginning for them.
I know our world has never before seen anyone like you, John Carter. Can it be that all Earthmen are like you? I was alone, a stranger, hunted, threatened. Yet you would freely give your life to save me. You come to me now with a tribe of green warriors who offer their friendship. You are no longer a captive, but wear the medal of great rank among their people. No man has ever done this.
Princess, I have done many strange things in my life, many things much smarter men would not have done. And now, before my courage fails, I would ask you to be mine in marriage. She smiled at me for a moment, and then her dark eyes flashed in the evening light.
You have no need of your courage, John Carter, because you already knew the answer before you asked the question.
Several days later, we reached the city of Helium. At first, the red men of Helium thought we were an attacking army. But they soon saw their princess. We were greeted with great joy. Tars Tarkas and his green warriors caused the greatest excitement. This huge group of green warriors entered the city as friends and allies. I soon met Tardos Mors, the grandfather of Dejah Thoris. He tried several times to thank me for saving the life of the princess, but tears filled his eyes, and he could not speak. For 9 years, I served in the government and fought in the armies of Helium as a prince of the royal family. It was a happy time. The Princess Dejah Thoris and I were expecting a child. Then, one day, a soldier returned from a long flight. When he landed, he hurried to the great meeting room. Tardos Mors met with the soldier and reported that every creature on the planet had but 3 days to live. He said the great machines that produced the atmosphere on the planet had stopped producing oxygen. He said no one knew why this had happened, but there was nothing that could be done. The air grew thin within a day. Many people could do nothing but sleep. I watched as my princess was slowly dying. I had to try something. I could still move with great difficulty. I went to our airport and chose a fast aircraft. I flew as fast as I could to the building that produced the atmosphere of the planet. Workers were trying to enter. I tried to help. With a great effort, I opened a hole. I grew very weak. I asked one of the workers if he could start the engines. He said he would try. I fell asleep on the ground. It was dark when I opened my eyes again. My clothing felt stiff and strange. I sat up. I could see light from an opening. I walked outside. The land looked strange to me. I looked up to the sky and saw the red planet Mars. I was once again on Earth in the desert of Arizona. I cried out with deep emotion. Did the worker reach the machines to renew the atmosphere? Did the air reach the people of that planet in time to save them? Was my Princess Dejah Thoris alive, or did she lie cold in death? For 10 years now, I have watched the night sky, looking for an answer. I believe she and our child are waiting there for me. Something tells me that I shall soon know.
And that's all the time we have for this Learning English broadcast. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow for another 30-minute Learning English broadcast. For more information on our other programs, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. And follow us on Instagram @VOA Learning English. I'm Ana Mateo.